From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a very off-the-cuff Midnight Movie Cowboys. I am Hunter Deucing in Dallas, Texas, and joining me in the wild outback of Australia is Mr. Stuart Balk. Say hello, Stu.
Hello, and cheers for this second cup of double espresso I'm consuming. Jumpstart
juice. It's late where I am. And in the Rocky Mountain High of Colorado, we have Mr. John Grace. Say hello, John.
Hello.
And we were going to do our Rock Month episode today, or part one of it, I guess. And but the guy we were going to have on is in the middle of a hurricane right now. So we're pushing it back. And if he's still alive, we'll do it with him then, you know, so... You know, just hold your horses.
If he's not, want you to do the episode, Hunter.
Yeah, no. You know what? If he's
I think, no. You know who doesn't want us to do the episode? Jazz Coleman.
Exactly.
He's casting a spell in the Ganges somewhere.
Hurricane Zeta or whatever it is. That's a very jazz thing.
Yeah. I have a rant about jazz, but I'll save it for the show.
And if that hasn't just given away who Rock Month is about, then I don't know what has.
Well, you know, yeah. That's true. You know, we reward our loyal listeners who will listen to our episodes about nothing. So before we got started, we were talking about home video releases and some of the stuff we've been getting lately. And we were talking about Vinegar Syndrome and how they do like a monthly box. But I was talking about the only release of theirs I have is Hell Comes to Frogtown. And I couldn't believe it was pretty sexual even for, you know, you said they got started restoring porn or something.
Yeah, they restored like the Herschel Gordon Lewis black porn film that he did. See, Herschel Gordon Lewis directed some pornography, and I guess one of them was an all-black porno.
I didn't know that. I
think that's the same company, Vinegar Syndrome. It's like, I think that was their thing. They were restoring a lot of obscure pornography, because there's a hardcore following for that. No pun intended.
Yes, there is.
Well, they do a lot of kind of Z-grade slasher stuff,
too. Yeah, they do a lot of shit. There's a lot of garbage.
They put out... They put out Wacko, so that... verifies them.
Put out some good stuff. Well, I have Dracula's Greatest Love, which is a fun Paul Naschy movie. That's the only Vinegar Syndrome release I have, and it's very well done. Can't complain about the package.
They just put out a bunch of Amityville Horror movies, and like we're talking like the bottom of the barrel.
Oh no!
Stuff. Oh, they got to deal with MGM then.
Was that like Amityville Dollhouse or whatever it's called? Or
yeah, one of those garbage ones? Really weird, obscure ones, yeah.
I got the first box set of the Amityville Horrors. It's got Amityville 1, 2, 3 in 3D, and I think that's it. And then a couple of bonus discs in there.
This isn't any of those.
Yeah, I know it's not, but the box set I've got is the one I need. That's all I need.
But yeah, we were talking about does Arrow do something like that, and I don't know. I've never seen anything like that.
That sounds like something they would do domestically in England.
Yeah,
like the Arrow Box Club or some nonsense. Oh, you know,
we'll send it in the post.
Right, you know, like to advertise in a soccer magazine or something. You know, or football.
You see, the first one signed up for that J.H. Deucing.
All right. After you go see Man United and you slip down some fish and chips, go get the latest Blu-ray of that Starfighter.
Have to be a British citizen. Hunter takes a pic with his Saxon shirt. See, I'm a Saxon fan, mate. I'm British.
See, I like football. I like rioting. And I'm a Scottish soccer hooligan. Actually, that didn't sound Scottish at all.
No.
But, you know, I was doing the Saxon fan voice, you know.
Yeah.
Saxon.
That covers the broad spectrum of the UK, the Saxon fan.
Yeah.
It covers England, Wales, Scotland.
You must get like the latest Arrow release and I don't know, a single from Blur or something like that. Or Gorillaz.
John, it's 2020, not 1997.
Oh, and then you get Sacha Baron Cohen's latest for free.
They have got Gorillaz. Posters of that freaking Borat 2. It's like the more I see the posters around town, I don't care.
They're shown in theaters there? Or is it
No, just advertising on Amazon for Amazon Prime.
Oh, okay. There's
no theaters running.
Talk about it.
Yeah.
The talk disappeared over the weekend. Like it was out for, it dropped on streaming. All these libs were all hyped up for it, and then by Monday, no one mentioned it.
Everybody was kind of disappointed with it, and it's because Comedy Today is just a bunch of people going, "Hey, here's what you're supposed to think. Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
If you don't think it's funny, you're a bigot."
Yeah, a bunch of lecturing nerds that you.
I mean, it's just a lecture, and you're not allowed to be funny anymore. So it's just sort of like, hey, I'm going to say a bunch of stuff that you probably agree with, right? That's funny.
I like his films.
You
want to
laugh?
I like his films from Borat. I like the first one still. I think it's very funny. Bruno, I like a lot. The Dictator was okay, and Brothers Grimsby, or Grimsby was called. I thought that was quite funny as well, but that's it. I mean, Borat 2, it's not going to go on the shelf. There's no need.
The only part of Bruno that I thought was hilarious was when he builds up to an interview with Harrison Ford.
Oh, he gets told to fuck off by Harrison Ford, yeah. No, there was some very funny things. Like, it was by far the riskiest film he ever did. By far. It's like, how the hell? Yeah.
I liked the first Borat. I thought the Ollie G movie was funny. He should have brought back Ollie G instead of Borat.
Ollie G is the best thing he ever did.
Yeah, it's actually funny.
Yeah. Like his interview with Noam Chomsky is hysterical.
Yeah.
Forgot all about that one. I think I've still got.
Yeah.
I've got one of the Ollie G DVDs, you know, like the best of his TV series. I gave it to one of my sons. I think my 14-year-old got it. But, yeah, that's right. He was talking to that kid in the wheelchair, and he goes, oh, how'd you mention, Nick, those Wharfdale speakers in that chair? You well hard, mate. It's like, it was funny, some of the things he used to do, but, yeah. Nah, I don't know about now. Not really interested.
These guys aren't funny anymore. They forgot how to be funny.
Well, and I asked my students, I said, you know, when's the last, like, comedy you guys saw that came out in theaters that you were all abuzz about? And they were like,
Booksmart.
No. You know, none of them go to
school. Darn.
And they're like, I don't know. They're like, I don't know. It's a good question.
That's right.
I had that problem in the 90s. I would be like, I can't tell you the last comedy I saw that I was like laughing hysterically at. It was like, it just seems like we went years without anything funny.
Which makes you wonder, how did a film like The Wedding Crashers ever get big? I mean, I didn't laugh once at that whole thing.
Well, even that you couldn't make today.
No, you couldn't.
No, but
it pandered to the kind of frat bro thing that Vince Vaughn appeals to. Like, there's these young men in America that play golf on the weekends and watch everything on ESPN, and they love Vince Vaughn.
Another question.
See anything he does.
The bigger question I always had was how do Wedding Crashers get big? How do women find Owen Wilson good looking? It's like,
I don't know if they do. He doesn't seem to have much of a career these days.
Yeah. But at that point in time, they were just going mad for him. Like, he's got a face like a, you know, post-birth vagina. It looks, busted up.
No, I was playing football in high school or something.
Oh, I don't really care about that, but you know, I just don't see what.
But
they're
I was just saying, that's what it was.
Yeah, I know.
But the problem he had the surfer appeal. It was a surfer, Texas surfer thing.
The problem with Wedding Crashers is that it's like a 3-hour movie.
Yeah.
And it was one of the early kind of films where I was like, this is a hit comedy that is way too long.
Right.
And then like Judd Apatow came along and started making these like 3-hour comedies.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Which is ridiculous and offensive.
Has anybody ever watched a Judd Apatow film, like even 40-Year-Old Virgin or Knocked Up, and said, yep, I wouldn't have cut a second out of that. That was just right lengthwise.
Nope.
No, no one. Cause it's...
And, you know, Funny People was the worst.
I never watched it.
God. And it was terrible. And I say that as a big Adam Sandler fan. People will tell you that it's Adam Sandler movie. Adam Sandler mostly makes bad movies, but this one's very good. Right. But no, it is one of the worst movies he's ever been in. And you know, because it's not what he should be. You know, it's like Judd Apatow is so full of himself, and that film is really a example of that. And I just remember he was on Corolla comparing himself to John Cassavetes. And I'm doing this serious acting with like family and friends. And, you know, we're really working through these scenes. And I'm like John Cassavetes and how he worked with Peter Falk and blah, blah. And I was just going, man, this guy needs to be stopped. You know,
I think I heard that. That was one of the last times I listened to Corolla. He was just kissing his ass and loving.
Yeah, oh, of course, yeah.
I like it. If I like the characters, I don't mind spending 3 hours.
I remember. Yeah, Corolla. I remember he was. I saw the film because he was praising it, and it's the worst movie he made. I will never see. You know, I should have not seen it, but I saw it. Cause, and plus, I like Graham Parker, and he was in it. But it was a total POS. It was an awful film, just wretched. Half a star.
The singer,
awful.
Graham Parker.
Yeah, Graham Parker.
Really?
Yeah, I know. Now you're gonna want to see it.
No, I don't, because I don't really care much for Graham Parker. I'm just curious. What's he doing in it?
Yeah, it's well, and I think that's the only reason Corolla likes it, because he loves Graham Parker. You know.
Yeah.
Okay. Graham Parker.
He also has bad taste in movies.
Yeah, he does. You know what, though? His film The Hammer is great. I love The Hammer.
It's decent. I didn't think it was great, but it's decent.
Oh,
I've
rewatched it plenty of times. I watched it with my mother-in-law the other day, and she loved it. It's fantastic. Love it. Mm-hmm. Good stuff.
What's that?
Road Hard, though, is not very good.
The Road Hard, I couldn't get through.
Yeah.
It was awful.
Although it's got Phil Rosenthal in it. Mm-hmm. Okay. Phil Rosenthal's documentary, Exporting Raymond, is hysterical. Have any of you seen that?
No.
No.
It's where he tries to take Everybody Loves Raymond, like the Russians want to adapt it for their television. And it's
which I've never seen that show.
It's actually bad. Moms go. It's pretty funny.
Right.
It's got, I mean, how
that is true.
Anybody hear the 13th box set that came out a couple of weeks ago?
Please.
I may have, yeah.
Oh, you bastard.
I was like, I'm not going to get it. I was like, I'm going to get it. And I got it.
Oh. So you got the Halloween box set and now the Friday thing.
God, why'd you get that?
Well, okay, the Halloween box
look,
set.
First of all, I am not knocking Hunter. I'm saying this out of jealousy. That's it. Sheer jealousy.
Not I'm knocking Hunter. I'm just saying that.
Yeah, of course you are.
The Halloween box set, man, that thing goes for
brutal.
A pretty penny.
It
now.
Is, yeah.
I got the Friday the 13th set because just like, you know what? I know both these movies are kind of junk, but
kinda.
Sure do look nice. Yeah. Well, we have some good ones in there,
man,
like
you're
Jason,
nice. You're such a nice guy, huh?
Freddy versus Jason, you know.
I want that part 3 with that real 3D so I can finally see it. When it came out in 82, I was too young to get in, so we had to go see myself, my brother, and a friend of ours. We had to go see Jaws 3 in 3D, but we could never get in to see. I mean, I've got that now in real 3D on the Blu-ray, and it's not a great movie, but the 3D effects are fun, so I do enjoy it, but it is not a good movie. Let me state that. But I've never, ever seen part 3 in its true 3D, only that Analograph version with the red and blue, and it's just like, ugh.
Oh, yeah. No, that was bad.
I attempted it, and I was like, ugh.
Yeah.
No, Friday the 13th Part 3, that was one of the first like slasher movies I ever saw. And when I was a kid, you know, I was way too young to see it, and it scared me to death. But now it's like...
It's hokey as hell. It really
is. Yeah. But man, when I was a kid, I was like scared debt to death.
Oh yeah, but when he lifts his mask up and you see that face, it's like, holy shit, this is some messed up stuff. But yeah, it's
because I remember I was like in fifth grade and I was staying over at a friend's house. That's how I saw it. Parents want your kids to grow. No sleepovers. So we went and a friend was like, we're going to rent a Friday the 13th. And my thought was, well, let's get the first one. And he goes, no. He goes, Jason's not in that one. And the second one, he doesn't have the hockey mask. We're going with part three because that's where he gets the hockey mask. And I went, okay, fair enough. You know? We watched that.
Yeah.
And I remember being confused because it start like it opens up. This is Rico from 2. You see Town That Dreaded Sundown Jason.
Yeah,
getting killed, altered to his, but he's still alive, and so yeah.
Part two is actually my favorite. I really like that a lot.
Yeah, I remember thinking it was a fun entry. I'm sure I've told the story on here about how I ran into Jason from the first movie.
At
a record store one time.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll spare you guys then, but and you know some of the other ones like. One that's a total POS that I love is part five.
I watched that in a at a horror convention in a like an auditorium with the director, and the crowd was very interactive with it, shouting stuff at the screen and everything.
Oh.
Like the nude scenes come up and everybody starts going crazy, and then he had the biggest grin on his face. I mean, he's a sleazebag. He got blackballed from Hollywood after turning it in.
Man, the way it opens, there's like this Chad chopping wood and he's super angry and there's this fat kid with like chocolate smeared all over his face.
You want a chocolate? It sounds like
I actually like that one. It's so sleazy bad. It's
crazy. I know. That's one of my favorite ones because it's so ridiculous.
We need to take that film and just redub that line to "Would you like a tortilla?" and it would make the film a lot better.
Do you like a tortilla?
It's happened. Yeah.
Whatever happens. But, you know, and like Jason Manhattan.
Oh, it's awful.
Boy, it's so silly. It's fun. Like, even the concept is so ridiculous.
Stowaway on a boat. Yeah.
Man, all I remember is before they would come out, Fangoria would have this whole article, all these cool gore effects you're going to see in the next Friday the 13th. And then after the movie's released, and like all Paramount movies at the time, they had a big opening weekend and then just drop off. But they'd say, well, you were denied seeing all this because of those Nazis at the MPAA. They'd have the editorial in Fangoria. And I was like, what type of shell game are you playing?
Yeah.
It's so annoying. You have all these gruesome photos in your dumb magazine, and then when the movie gets released, it's all cut out for the MPAA anyway. So why the hell do you hype it up? It's like you're hyping up stuff that's not in the movie. But and back then, they did not restore this shit for video.
No.
They didn't care.
No.
Paramount didn't give a damn about it.
Oh, the Friday the 13th movies were just ATM machines. It was cheap.
They made money to cover Paramount's costly flops. Paramount never spent a dime on the damn
thing. They even admitted, they said, these are just cash cows. Just make a cheap cheap Friday the 13th, knock them out nearly every year.
Well,
and they'll make money.
And they were kind of an embarrassment because like Kevin Bacon won't talk about being in Friday the 13th.
He
like,
said he was willing to do one. Now he actually said he was willing to appear in a new one.
Really?
Probably wants work.
He needs work. He's
what's the work. So speaking of that, what's going on with that series? Because I know Michael Bay produced a Friday the 13th movie, which wasn't very good at all.
Terrible.
The only thing people seem to care about in that film was the nudity. But
that's so
the
rare
series
in movies these days.
I know, right? But legal thing,
who wrote a screenplay for the original and only got like a few $1,000s. He was a soap writer, and he wrote that script for what was then just a low budget production. I think without any studio backing at all. you know, I think it was sold to the studio later after.
Well, Sean Cunningham produced a lot of cheap shit, schlock, you know, with.
Yeah, he was a garbage movie producer up in the Northeast, and they made it, and Victor Miller wrote the script, and had nothing or anything, I think, with the when it was sold to Paramount, and they made sequels. So he didn't get paid for any of that. And then, of course, the merchandising of those characters, and he came up with all the names and everything, and it, so he never got a slice of it, never got a piece of the pie. So he did a sort of a trademark suit or whatever, you know, what like a Jack Kirby type of lawsuit, although I think here he's very justified. And it's held up the rights of the series because nobody wants to touch it because it could be a legal, you know, I don't know what the word would be, a legal tsunami.
Minefield.
Yeah. If he wins, like, suddenly you got to pay him for everything. But I was always like, if Paramount were smart, they'd just give Victor Miller like $13, $14, $15 million and say, okay, now we can make another one because we can make it back. Money every year.
Yep.
And fans, you know, you could make a POS Friday the 13th movie and all the people would go see it because it's just the brand. You know,
exactly. That's the way it's always. Every time there's a Friday the 13th coming by, it became a running gag on my Facebook. I say, it's Friday the 13th and Paramount still can't get its shit together to just make a dumb Friday the 13th movie. It's like, this is with all the pizzazz has gone from Hollywood. And I was like, just give Victor Miller like $20 million and to make him go away. Just give him $20 million and then you don't have to go to court or anything. You can enjoy his money.
And we're looking
to make it all back opening weekend. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
And the thing about this current era too is we get these kind of ridiculous artsy reboots like David Gordon Green's Halloween. You know, and it's almost like I would like to have just some good old fashioned schlock. You know, just give me the meat and potatoes, whatever.
I think they threatened a found footage Friday the 13th, like that was pitched to them, and they were going to go with it. But I think the Miller lawsuit stopped it. I'm glad it did.
Actually, you know where that series has stayed alive is in video games.
What they're iffy about it. I think because he would get some video game royalty money out of that.
Yeah, because the video game has been kind of pretty successful. It's one of these multiplayer games where one player kind of gets to be Jason, and then everybody else is trying to survive. Have you played it?
Only a bit. I've actually got it on the. Well, because I told my two oldest boys, I said, look, there's a Friday the 13th game. When you see it come down to a decent price, not the 50-something bucks they're asking at the point that it came out, let me know. And then one of my sons said, oh, Dad, the movie's down to like 15 bucks or something. I said, just get it.
Yeah, it's cheap.
Yeah. I've got on the PS4 and the Xbox One.
Yeah, I think it's on Switch now too. But it's been a pretty big hit. And, you know, people really like it.
Didn't it have bugs when it first came out with the game?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, all those games kind of have the stuff they are now, but they release updates.
Oh, yeah. But I'll tell you what, those damn games are so big in file size. One of my sons got one of the latest Call of Duties. It was like 85 gigs. I thought, what the hell?
Yeah, it's insane. it's insane. Like, the thing about the PS4 is, you know, it has a pretty big hard drive, but the games are so big, you can only get a few on there.
Unless you get an external drive and move them over.
Yeah, or what's cool about the Switch is you can pop a micro SD in there, and I got like a 1,000 gig micro SD, and that really made it so I could. But there's a lot of the games on there are small, like a couple of gigs. You know?
Yeah, I know. Have you got Animal Crossing yet on your Switch?
My wife has it.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't play it. It's not really my thing.
What's the name of that game? You just walk for like hundreds of hours. Dead Stranding.
Death Stranding. Death Stranding. Darrow and I did a show about that. We did a podcast about that.
Yeah.
It's basically but here's the thing. That game was made by Hideo Kojima, and he made a game called Metal Gear Solid 2 for the PS2.
Mm.
And he made it like it was in development like before 9/11, and it came out right after 9/11. But the game had all these big speeches about what the New World Order is going to be like, and like it had terrorism in New York.
Oh, shit.
And it was like, here's how the world is going to change. Like, rights are going to be stripped away, and blah 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 under the guise of terror. It had all this stuff about what the New World Order is going to be like, and it was all like the Patriot Act post 9/11 stuff.
Prophetic, it was.
And then he puts out Death Stranding. Death Stranding came out right before COVID, and it's about a world where a disease has caused everybody to lock themselves into bunkers underground.
Jesus.
And you're a delivery man who is delivering stuff to people in these bunkers, and there's these weird ghostly spirits that attack you. There's
it's also known as the game version of Il Postino or the Postman.
Yeah, but there's this rain that caused, there's disease and rain, and there's all this stuff, and you know, the people live in these bunkers, and nobody interacts with anybody anymore, and you interact through screens. And I was going, Jesus. What is Kojima like? Is he attending the Bilderberg Group meetings? Like, what's going on?
That's scary. To do it once is a fluke. To do it a second time is just unheard of.
Yeah.
Unless you know.
But, like, a lot of people will go after him and say he's long-winded, he's a gas bag, whatever. But he does have... There is something about him where he's able to read political tea leaves in a really weird way that nobody else is. but I did play Death Stranding. Garo did too.
Of course.
So he's the Pat Buchanan of video games.
Yes, he yeah, kind of.
I will say,
after those Pat Buchanan books, and then 10 years later it all comes through.
Yeah.
I will say one thing.
And a hateful guy. Shit.
Moving on to purchases made, lockdown purchases I got in Taste of Blood of Dracula on Blu-ray, Eating Raoul finally on Blu-ray, and I did get Multiple Maniacs on Blu-ray, the John Waters film.
And you got the Criterion stuff?
Yeah. Well, it was going cheap. It was only like about $22 each, Australian dollars, with free ship. So I thought, well, okay. And I need Multiple Maniacs. I've seen it once on tape, but I've never owned it because it hasn't been available. So I stick it on my John Waters shelf. And for those of you who have not seen it, it's a weird ride of a film, being an early John Waters film. But the way Criterion's cleaned it up is unreal. I couldn't believe it.
They do a great job with stuff like that. It's, you know, the way they get these movies looking is... You know, I don't know how they do it.
The only thing I should say is that they are starting to lag behind companies like Arrow now, I feel.
Oh, I agree. Absolutely.
And it's not a knock on their abilities to get these obscure films. But they're starting to get really lazy lately, you know, just grabbing films and re-releasing them, whereas Arrow is getting stuff and bringing it out for the first time, or bringing it out in a much superior version. Like, Arrow released a Blu-ray of RoboCop, which I do like that film quite a bit. But I don't own that version yet. You do? Yeah. I'm sure you do. And they also released, and I missed it, American Werewolf in London. But I didn't get that one
because I'm just too perpetually mad at John Landis, you know.
Oh, let it go. Yeah.
He's killed more Vietnamese kids than any American soldier.
Okay, so on the eve of their on the day of their death, do you mourn them every year, or do you just say, "Yeah, horrible act. He should have been held accountable for it."
I just say, "Fuck that hack director who was lucky to get his job." You know, he worked his way up from the mail room or something, and then became a stuntman, and then he started directing movies.
Show me where on the doll John Landis hurt you.
Well, they showed the Twilight Zone death footage on CNN one morning, and never forgot that. That should
but it's
never happen
CNN's fault. It's not his fault. They should have suppressed the footage.
Stories that went around about what happened on that set, it's no.
He's a dickhead. Actually, when you look into it, it is pretty like, wow. Like, it really shows you the scummy side of showbiz. You know,
Hollywood needs to be destroyed. It should have been destroyed 30 years ago.
But yeah, Stu, that's why that's one hole in my collection. But and also he raised Max Landis, so there's another thing I'm mad.
Yeah, that doesn't help.
That's two bads against the world.
Yeah, but if you can at least stream Multiple Maniacs, give it a watch because it's a fun watch.
Maybe and they've put out a bunch.
I think it's on their service. It's they're putting a lot of energy into the streaming service, but I don't think they put the John Waters stuff up yet.
Mm. They've put out some other stuff like Polyester.
Yeah, and Female Trouble. I want those two, but I already have those on the double disc New Line titles from 20 years ago that came out in the late '90s. I mean, I'll hang on to them once they eventually... Because mine comes with Female Trouble and Pink Flamingos, Polyester, and... What the other one was? I can't remember. Might have been Hairspray. I don't remember. But I do want to upgrade them to Blu-ray, because those DVDs are good, but they are quite old, and technology has advanced quite a bit since then. But, yeah.
Well, Criterion just had a flash sale. And I got a few things. I got Stephen Frears' The Hit with Terrence Stamp.
Oh, good movie. Good movie.
Very good film. I also got The Gunfighter with Gregory Peck.
Pass.
And I got their re-release of Godard's Pierre Le Feu. And some other recent Criterions I got. I got a Elephant Man, the David Lynch film.
Why didn't you get it on 4K?
I don't have a 4K setup.
Don't you? Oh, you don't have a 4K TV or a player?
Both.
Both. I better get down to the Hi-Fi store.
I don't know. Need to look, but I don't.
Well, how old's your TV?
I got it when I moved in here, so.
I'd imagine it would be. Yeah, it would be.
2018, so it might be.
Yeah, it would be.
It's not very good. But yeah, when I get a PS5 though, or whatever, you know, I'm gonna, you know, I'll have a player that does that. And I also got Beau Travail, which is a really interesting movie that Criterion put out. But as far as Arrow stuff goes, John, you'll appreciate this one. Warning mm-hmm. from Space.
Yeah, I got that one.
Yeah,
I had to.
Die 8. Yes, any Japanese sci-fi, you gotta get.
Yeah, I think that was the first one made in color. I might be wrong.
You might be right. I also got Graveyards of Honor, which has the Kenji Fukasaku Graveyard of Honor and the Takashi Miike one, which you know how I feel about Takashi Miike.
Why did they toss that on there?
Flash Gordon release and the Mallrats.
Did you which Flash Gordon did you get? Just the standard or the one with the big box and all the goodies inside of it?
I got the big box with the goodies.
And you got the first
box with
no, that's all right. The Irishman from Criterion yet?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Thought you might have.
I think putting out these Netflix movies seems I also got The Last Starfighter, so there's that.
Oh, okay.
Nick Castle. But, John, you'll appreciate this. I just wasted some money on some Blu-rays. You know, I had that Clint Eastwood, like, three Western pack, you know?
Uh-huh.
But I got the Kino Lorber releases with the slip covers of High Plains Drifter, Joe Kidd, and Two Mules for Sister Sarah.
Yeah.
So that's going into the cell pile.
Into the what? The cell? Oh, no good.
Oh, I meant, well, you know.
Just hang
yeah,
on.
They're,
honestly,
they're kind of watch once. Sell
you know what, though? I have found over the years that you may get rid of it, but then later on you'll think, shit, I'm missing it from my collection.
Yeah.
And I had it. And really, what's it going to take up on the shelf space-wise? Not much.
Right. No, I'm going to keep it because it's the Bud Bedeker connection. It's worth keeping for archival purposes. But one thing though about these spaghetti not spaghetti westerns, but like spaghetti western or spaghetti western adjacent films like the Clint Eastwood stuff,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is that why is it? No, I know why it is. So this is a rhetorical question.
Mm-hmm.
For the commentary track. the only person these people seem to be able to get or want to get or have any imagination to get, and you already know where I'm going with this, is freaking Alex Cox. Okay?
I don't know why this British
communist, I have to listen to him whinge on about stuff when we have people like Eric Zaldivar and Mike Malloy, friends of the show, who know more than he does, who are much smarter, more articulate, and have a more interesting outlook than the guy who directed Sid and Nancy.
Are you talking about for the Eastwood movies they get him? Or are you talking about the genre general?
For these three re-releases I got, High Plains Drifter, Joe Kidd, and Two Mules for Sister Sarah, they all have commentaries with Alex Cox.
Yeah.
But you grab so many Blu-rays of the spaghetti Western movies. And those ones I mentioned are not spaghetti Westerns, but they have that inspiration.
Where is Richard Schickel dead? Is he? Because usually he does them all.
I think he is dead.
Oh, he's dead. Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, he's done a lot of Clint commentaries. I've listened to some of them. It's kind of funny, though. He gets some stuff wrong on him. Like,
he gets a lot wrong because I've listened to Dirty Harry, and I was a little stunned. And there's just things he doesn't notice that's like, okay, you're not picking up on that. I don't know why they don't get Dave Kerr. He was another film critic who was on Eastwood's payroll. He could do commentary, and he's knowledgeable about Eastwood's career. He was actually fired from the Chicago newspaper. I think it was a Chicago Tribune for praising The Rookie, the Clint Eastwood action movie.
I enjoy that one.
Really?
I enjoy that film.
Yeah, he was fired.
It's funny. Sometimes a critic will write a review and the paper will go, this guy's out of touch. And
Eastwood, I will add to this, though. Eastwood called up the paper and told him to give his job back, and they gave it.
Oh, really? Well, the critic at the New York Times was a guy who gave, and what was it? Pauline Kael at the New Yorker hated him. And so when Bonnie and Clyde came out, Bonnie and Clyde was dismissed by critics initially. Uh-huh. It kind of had the Halloween thing happen where it got bad reviews, but then there were some reviews that said, actually, this is really good. And then, you know, opinion sort of changed among critics. That Pauline Kael released a very positive review of Bonnie and Clyde. It's probably the most famous thing she's ever written. And opinion turned around, and the New York Times decided Bosley Crowther is out of touch, and they fired him. And Pauline Kael was so thrilled over that. She was like, I finally got him fired. Indirectly. Yeah.
Nice of her.
Yeah. No, she was a vindictive lady. Mm-hmm. Not nice. I read her biography.
Mm.
She always came off like a bitch, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Good writer, but
she's an amazing writer. Her film criticism, like the critic who comes close or is superior, is like Armand White, you know.
I think John Simon's a better writer than her.
You're probably right. I'm just saying
She's entertaining. She's entertainingly.
Well, I don't agree with a lot of her takes. Like, she doesn't like a lot of the stuff I like, and she likes a lot of stuff I don't like, but she's such a good writer that you don't really care, you know?
Right.
But Bosley lost his job because of his bad review of Bonnie and Clyde.
Did you know his son wrote the screenplay for Kill and Kill Again, the South African karate movie?
I did not know that. That's amazing. You know.
He also worked on some other stuff, like the Chuck Norris film Missing in Action is co-written by James Crowther, I think is his name.
Wow. You see, Missing in Action 2 is better, I think.
It is. It was actually filmed first and needed reshoots, like adding some action in, and then it came out as the sequel. Because they already had the theaters booked for Missing in Action, so they just changed its title to Missing in Action 2 and put out the second film first.
Directed by...
So they did it like a prequel.
Directed by Friday the 13th, Part 4 director Joseph Zito.
Yeah, he was not really a good director for Chuck.
No, he was terrible. He did, didn't he do Invasion USA?
He did.
That movie sucks.
Joe Zito started making those Chuck Norris movies. I'm like, when's he going to kick somebody? When's he going to do a spinning back fist? He never does it. Just picks up a gun and shoots Filipinos pretending to be Vietnamese.
Yeah. Like Invasion USA is so boring. And you look at the poster and you're like, this is going to be the Citizen Kane of Chuck Norris movies. Nope. Speaking of Chuck Norris, though, I recently got that Scorpion releasing Blu-ray of Lone Wolf McQuade.
Uh-huh. Nice.
Yeah. Hello. That's a Chuck Norris movie right there.
I wish they would throw in the soundtrack with that, like on CD.
I agree. That is a great
I love
soundtrack.
It. I wanted to get it. And every release of that, including the Italian release, is going for like $100, $200. It's ridiculous. So I just listed it on YouTube, I guess, or Spotify.
And like David Carradine wears that nice sweater.
The V-neck sweater.
And like Chuck gets defeated and like he dumps beer on himself to resurrect himself. Oh, it's so good.
And he drives out of the grave as well.
Yeah, he drives out of his grave. He like dumps beer on himself and drives out of his grave. It's just magic.
The rednecks at the opening night screening were going nuts for that scene because the theater was packed and, pours a beer. And they're all going, oh, shit. And then, when the truck comes booming out of the ground.
I also bought, I think for the third time, Silent Rage on Blu-ray.
Again?
Yeah. Well, I had it on DVD and I have like a 3-pack. I have it in like a Blu-ray pack, like with a bunch of other movies that I didn't have. So I bought that. But then I saw this like tape edition of it it's stupid. Milk Creek put it out, but it was like $5. And I was like, okay, I got to get that.
Yeah. I ordered that from Amazon and still haven't watched it, but I figure we'll do a show on that one day.
What we need to do is a show on the action slasher combo, like 10 to midnight.
Right.
Because there was this weird period where they were doing slasher movies with action stars and
they made money.
Yeah, and those are like 10 to Midnight's one of the freakiest action slasher films ever made for me.
Yeah, I don't know how it got released. It's actually shocking to watch.
It is scary. Like the killer stripping down naked before I felt genuinely like disturbed by that. That's one of the few slasher movies that like really was like
What would happen?
My skin crawl.
What would the killer do? Strip down naked before he killed them.
Like, but when he would kill people, he just took his clothes off and he'd run around naked and kill people. And yeah, it felt like this. The way it's presented.
It's what Lizzie Borden did when she murdered her parents all those years ago.
Really?
Because then they would get the fabric of your clothes to match you to a murder scene. And here he was, it was before DNA. So it's like here he was avoiding leaving fabric behind.
Yeah.
Because that's how they nailed the Atlanta child killer, Wayne Williams. It's like there was carpet from his carpet fiber from his apartment or home or whatever that was matched. And German Shepherd hair from his pet German Shepherd that matched to the murder victims.
That Lizzie Borden film that came out, I guess, in the 70s with Bewitched
Elizabeth
lady.
Montgomery.
I mean,
right?
Yeah, that one. And she stripped down naked. Like, you don't see her naked. But you do, like, you get the idea that she is. And she kills her parents and just jumps in the shower and washes the blood off. And that's how they are. That's how
that
she
way
did
it didn't get on her clothing.
Yeah.
So she couldn't be caught.
Yeah, pretty much.
But the way this guy acts, he acts like a little kid. And it's really disturbing. But it also has kind of the Dirty Harry thing going on where it's like the law protects these creeps too much. And Charles Bronson's like, hey, I'm going to get him.
Oh, you know what this is for, don't you? Jerking off.
Yeah. I'll tell you what else I did pick up through Amazon for under $10 was the Destruction Mad Butcher EP on CD. The standalone release one. Which, good. I hadn't heard it in a number of years, but I forgot how good it was. So, just going to pick up those.
Seen that one.
Well, it's an album. It's an EP, Hunter. It's not a something.
I mean, that's what I meant. I'm sorry. I haven't listened to that one.
You haven't heard the Mad Butcher EP? Shit. What's wrong with you?
Well, a lot of things, clearly, because said I haven't seen it, so something's wrong with me. Well,
yeah, that's right. But no. So, I've got that, and I'm going to now go back and pick up Release from Agony, Eternal Devastation, all the early ones up to pretty much and including Live Without Sense. That'll do me for Destruction. All the latest stuff I don't really care for, but they ain't cheap. Let's say that much. That one was, but the rest ain't cheap. So it's going to be a drip system, getting those slowly, slowly. Yeah. So that's that.
I was, yeah. John's been sending me his stuff in his vinyl collection to sell.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
And you've just been
not sending me physically, just telling me what's in the pile.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, send it to me. I'll sell it off for you on your behalf. Whack straight into the shelf.
Nah. It's all, you know. You know, but it's some good stuff.
Like what?
Oh, let me look. Let's see here. John, Best of Rod Stewart.
it's early Rod Stewart when he was doing Stones covers.
Waterloo by ABBA.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The stuff that Hunter told me to put aside, because I have it in a separate stack, is Ice-T's The Iceberg, Freedom of Speech, Watch What You Say.
Yeah.
Probably the last Ice-T released on actual vinyl when it wasn't hip to do it. Let's see, the first two Devo records.
Yeah.
And I think I got Blue Oyster Cult, Some Enchanted Evening.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. You know,
that's what I have set aside for Hunter so far.
I need to... Yeah, I don't think I have that one, but I need to look. I did get the new BOC on vinyl.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. Have you listened
to it? The funny thing is, I've listened to some of it on like YouTube, which sounds good.
Yeah, it sounds like Blue Oyster Cult. You know, like it's right. Not too clean. But, you know, they have this other guy singing some songs, and he's a little, I don't think I like his voice very much, but the song That Was Me, I think is hilarious.
You know? Oh, like, we spoke about that. Yeah. Not long ago. Yeah. That was me.
Yeah.
That
was me.
Well, the funny thing is I've been trying to get rid of my vinyl cause I don't want a big vinyl collection. Then I go to the only county library sale of the year where they had the thing where you had to buy a ticket for an hour of access to the sale. So I went over to the vinyl records section, bad move, because somebody had apparently passed away and left their record collection to the library. And I walked out with 75 obscure jazz and blues records.
Shit.
Like, all in great condition. And a lot of them are from like the 60s and still have the shrink wrap on them.
What?
And it's like, it's blues guys I've never heard of. Like, Blind Lemon Jelly, you know, the Blind Belly Jelly, just obscure guys on Chicago Folk Roots records and stuff. It's really, look at the stuff up on Discogs. Nothing is stood out like some sort of, you know, gem or whatever worth thousands, but everything's like a $10, $15 type of thing.
What did all that set you back for 75?
I think it was 75 bucks. It's a dollar a record.
Buck a piece. Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
So it's like, well, and blues do sound great on vinyl. I have to admit, it sounds more alive than it does on CD. There is something about the vinyl sound to blues, you know, old analog
that, mix. That is an episode unto itself, the analog versus digital, or the CD format.
I think we threatened that for years.
Yeah, should do it. But, yeah. Okay. Anything else that's been happening, boys?
Oh, no.
No. Oh, anybody get anything from the flash sale or the lightning sale that Amazon had a couple of weeks back?
Yeah, I got Star Trek Enterprise on Blu-ray.
Nice.
And I got the Marx Brothers Blu-ray set.
Oh, the Animal Crackers, Coconuts, Monkey Business one.
Yeah, the one that has all the stuff with Zeppo.
Yeah. That's the one I've got, I ordered as well.
It on DVD, but the Blu-ray set was so cheap, I just had to get it.
I know, right? It was like 20...
Is that...
15 bucks, something like that. What was it?
Yeah, it was 15 bucks. And the DVD set I have is just humongous, and, you know, it's one of those book-style ones, and it's kind of like rotting away, you know, a little bit. So that way I can free up some space and get rid of it.
Yeah.
I got that as well. Get a HD upgrade, you know?
Yeah. And I got the Adventures of Rocky and Bullwinkle box set, which you got, John, as well, didn't you? You said.
Yes, I did. Nice. I got it. It's funny because my kid's getting into, there's a new Mr. Peabody and Sherman thing on Netflix. And I said, oh, you got to see the old one. So I got to introduce him to
the Is it woke?
I don't know. I haven't looked at it. He describes something to me. And it's like, I don't think they make it anything political out of it. You know, kind of pointless. They still ain't kids. But
that's when you got to get them, son. You got to get them young.
Right. I'm sure there's some dumb stuff in there, but that, whatever. But that, we'll watch the old one and see how it goes.
Those old ones are pretty pretty radical for their time, I tell you, for the late 50s.
Yeah.
They're pretty...
Because they were working with low budgets, so the writers decided to have fun with the fact that their production values weren't the best, so it's what kind of makes them timeless.
Yeah,
because I remember that show was really funny when I was a kid.
Oh, it's hysterical.
You know, it just it but the animation sucked, but it was like, you know, it seemed to make the most of it. It was always fun to watch.
The writers went on to work on Get Smart, like on TV.
You go.
I think you're right. Yeah.
Yeah, and I also got the Bob Hope. There was like a Bob Hope mega set or whatever. It's basically every Universal Bob Hope release on DVD, and I got that for like $15. It's even got the Road Picks, which I needed on. I needed a complete run of those on disc. And I also one that still had its Prime deal sale days later because as Oliver told me about that, he thought the Psycho sequels had aged pretty well, and I said, huh. I should go back and get that box set, see what it's going for. So that was available for $13 far back as Saturday. You get the three sequels and the original movie on one Blu-ray set put out by Universal.
I've said forever Psycho 2 is the best horror sequel of all time. It is an outstanding film.
Just because it was directed by Richard Franklin, right?
No.
Aussie.
That helps because it has a... a real auteur behind the camera, but no, it's actually just a damn good movie. It really is.
I remember being really effective when I saw it on cable when I was a kid. So,
the only thing I will say that I don't like, well, I know I do like the fact that it's in color.
Mm-hmm.
It is something to try and watch it. I've never done it, but I experimented real quick, but didn't watch it in full. Drain the color from your television and watch that in black and white. It actually works.
Really?
Yeah, it does. It's not one of those films where you remove the color from it, like the black and chrome version of Mad Max shit-ass road, because that just doesn't work at all. It's just stupid.
Oh, it's terrible. It's terrible.
Did Franklin want to shoot it in black and white by chance?
I don't know about that. I know there's a 45, 50-minute making of the actual film somewhere on YouTube. Somebody's made it, and it's really well done. So I don't remember about that, but there is a matching shot he's done where it goes from black and white into color. But I don't know if that was recreated in 81, 82 for that, or if it's just a match cut from Hitchcock's into their film.
Right.
I don't know.
Speaking of Psycho, that's a movie that got a Blu-ray re-release recently.
Oh, the two versions on it, right?
Yeah, so I didn't know about this. I was going to say, red pill me on this. It said that the version on the Blu-ray, it said the version of Psycho you normally get on video is the TV version.
Yes.
And that this version has the uncut version on home video for the first time. I had no idea. Is that true?
Yes. Yes.
Huh. And no idea.
Yeah, there's about 23 seconds more in the film, which doesn't sound like much, and there's a lot more of Bates looking through the peephole into Janet Leigh's room.
So are you saying that Gus Van Sant was being faithful when he had Vince Vaughn masturbating?
No, it doesn't quite go that far, but
okay.
There's a lot more skin, if you will, of Janet Leigh, which never hurts, especially back then. But
we wanted to see more.
And there's also one, and spoilers, but you will see the film if you buy it, is when Arbogast is killed, he's cut and he falls backward down the stairs. Then you see Mrs. Bates run down and stab him twice. and then it fades. Mm-hmm. Well, that's longer. You just see Mrs. Bates just stabbing into him just over and over and over.
Interesting, man. Okay, whoa. So this is this. I picked it up. So this is going to be this is going to be some. So I'm going to force the wife to sit down and watch this
because yeah, I was must going. Be why this, the set this, was blown out? That's why they're blowing out the set. So
oh,
cheap.
For sure. Yeah. Most likely. Because,
yeah, it was like, this is the first time it's on video. I was like, you got to be kidding me. I've been watching the TV broadcast this whole time.
Yeah. I didn't know about it until literally like about 3 weeks back. I'm like, longer version. I'd heard about a 109-minute cut as opposed to 108. But I thought I must have got their time wrong or whatever it was. But I did a bit of scouting around. And like, oh, that's what it is. So I knew of it, but only very, very recently. I'm not saying I knew 20 years ago at all. But there was a thing, there was a poster I saw that said uncut. This is years and years and years and years ago. So I don't know if it was just someone trying to, you know, prop up their sales by saying, oh, fully uncut, when it never was. But now, you said you picked it up, Hunter. Is it on the 4K? Oh, you didn't pick up the 4K, did you?
Mm-mm.
No, you do realize no, when you buy a 4K, you get a Blu-ray with it. So you can watch the Blu-ray until you get a 4K, then you can upgrade, and it's already in there.
I didn't see it at the. I just saw it at the store. I mean, I didn't notice a 4K release.
Mm.
But,
yeah. I mean, I've got that box set as well, the Psycho one with. What was it? Psycho 2, 3, 4. The Bates Motel movie, which is just fucking awful, with Bud Cort. The remake, and then another two disc of bonus features. It's only in Australian only released, it is. But I'll grab this one as well. I guess got to have Psycho.
Oh, no. Yeah,
uncut.
Yeah,
even if it is
only 20 seconds. I'm very interested in this. You know, seeing how it's different.
How familiar are you with the film? Have you seen it?
I've seen it probably. Probably more than 5 times.
I've seen it about 50, at least 50 times easily.
No, I haven't seen it that many times. No, but, you know, it's one I watch once every couple years, you know.
Mm. Okay. So then again, so that footage to you, had you seen it, you wouldn't have been able to pick it out and go, ah, brand new footage. Right.
I might have. I mean, the killing scenes I know pretty well. Because, like you said, when Abergast gets stabbed, I just remember seeing the knife go up and it goes down and once or twice. Yeah. That's it, you know.
No, yeah, this one you just see Mrs. Bates just wailing on him. It's like, fuck. Because I've seen just little snippets that someone's posted up on YouTube just very, very recently. And, I mean, yeah, I really tried hard to draw myself away from seeing it, but I'm going, oh fuck, I just gotta see what this extra footage is. And I'm just like, shit, brutal. So but I will pick it up, absolutely pick it up. I'm actually even head to JB later on, now that Melbourne's opened up. Longest lockdown in the world, Melbourne represent. Out of anywhere in the world, longest fucking lockdown anywhere. Daniel Andrews,
sweet,
you asshole, fuck face, big eared fucking twat.
Don't worry. Some 90-year-old will get infected, and then you're locked down again.
Oh no! They've already grilled him out. They said if we get another few infections, you're gonna lock everything down. Well, I don't believe so. If he does that, there will be fucking riots. It'll put Philadelphia's current riots to shame. But I don't think he will. Because the Australian government's very, very angry at him.
Mm.
As they should be. Big-eared prick.
Yeah,
but also I did pick up the Al Goldstein documentary on DVD.
Oh my gosh!
Oh, shut up. Yeah, love me some Al Goldstein. I think he's funny as that guy. John's favorite.
Al. Which one's John's favorite?
Al Goldstein.
Oh yeah. I remember Jim Goad like interviewed him in Answer Me or something.
Did he get a what was it? Fuck you from Goldstein, like he did on every episode of Midnight Blue.
Probably.
Yeah, as he should.
He interviewed. It was like an issue where he interviewed like offensive figures. So he interviewed Al Goldstein. It was like people who are sort of rabble rousers or offensive. So he interviewed Al Goldstein, David Duke, and Al Sharpton.
You know damn well Garrow would have watched that episode if he was if he knew about it at the time.
It's a magazine. It was just a
TV show. Okay.
Yeah, but like it was just like a issue where they had these interviews with just these sort of controversial figures.
Mm. Okay then.
Yeah.
All right, boys. Anyway. We got anything else, or are we gonna?
I think that's it. I think we can wrap it up. We've been going for an hour. It's nice. Hold tight them over till we have the Rock Month then.
Yeah. Once everything is cleared up and we can.
Hurricane Catherine.
Yeah, this is just something we just put out just for the sake of. As you can tell, there's no structure or into it. It's just a throw out. Just
what are our movies?
Yeah.
Yeah. Once Hurricane Catherine Zeta-Jones passes, then we can,
that's what killed.
We can have a guest on, and we can Kirk, do our Rock Month thing.
That's what killed Kirk Douglas, Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Yeah, exactly.
He couldn't handle the old man. Couldn't handle the big girl.
Hey, isn't Michael Douglas at this party? I'm married to Catherine Zeta-Jones. Will you sleep with me?
Mm. There's another guy who women seem to go all over is Michael Douglas. I'm like, what?
Michael Douglas always seems sleazy to me. Like, Kirk Douglas was always alpha.
He is. He doesn't seem it.
He's probably hung like a golf club or something. That's said to be the rumor.
Who, Michael Douglas?
Yeah.
Yeah, but see, rumors are rumors. I mean,
yeah, it's the rumor they've heard. That's the whole reason, like, chicks, you know, you hear about he and Sharon Stone really did it on the set of Basic Instinct, all that stuff, and the sex addict nonsense.
Yeah, whatever.
I mean, he's a piece of shit, but, you know. used to take his little son, who I think became a junkie or something.
Yeah.
You know, to cocaine party, cocaine rap parties at Wall Street. And
nice,
everything.
Nice.
Cameron Douglas, is that his son?
Yeah, I think so. The one who ended up in legal trouble.
Cocaine Douglas.
Didn't the Kirk, Michael, and Cameron all do like a movie together where they're like generations?
They might have. I haven't really kept up. Michael Douglas has been in a lot of stuff. I haven't even. Like, I had no idea he was even still doing movies. I always forget he's an Ant-Man. You know?
Yeah. That's how when I talked about Kirk Douglas in my class, I'd always use Ant-Man to go, you know, his son, Michael Douglas, he was Hank Pym, you know, and they're like, oh, yeah.
Oh, that's so sad. Hunter, you just depressed me.
Well, you know, it runs in the family. So it's from 2003.
Okay.
And it's got Michael Douglas, Kirk Douglas, and Cameron Douglas. And Diana Douglas, Rory Culkin, and Bernadette Peters. And it's like a family movie. So if you want many Douglases for the price of one, you know, there you go.
The only good film Bernadette Peters ever made was what was it? Where he was a skip tracer.
Pink Cadillac.
Pink Cadillac, thank you. Yeah, that's one. Mm. Only films but of Eastwood's is not on Blu-ray yet. That and couple others as well. Pink Cadillac. Oh, White Hunter, Black Heart, which I am waiting for. I really like that film a lot.
Well, there's not like a blue set that has that in it or something.
There is, but they are only DVD releases. It even says in there that due to unavailability on Blu-ray, these films are DVD only. And that's those two.
Oh, weird.
Yeah. There's some big box set of Eastwood's that every film of his from the first right up until and including The Mule. And even ones he's directed, but there's only seven on there, six or seven on there that are DVD only due to them not being high definition format yet. Bird's another one, the one he directed, which I like a lot, that film, but that's not got a HD release just yet.
Damn, that's one I still haven't seen. I actually still want to check out.
I haven't seen that. One that I want to get of his I wanted to get on Blu-ray, Warner Archive put it out, is Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil.
Oh, yeah, the John Cusack one. I don't think I ever saw that.
Yeah, it's good.
Oh, is it really? Good. Okay.
Yeah, I remember liking it. It's been a few years, but it's shot in Savannah, Georgia, and it has that great Southern Gothic feel.
What was the one that Dad used to rave about? He said it was excellent. Mystic River?
Mystic River.
Never saw it either.
Sean Penn crying scenes.
Oh, is it? Oh, God.
I've never seen it. I read the book some time ago. Didn't care for it, but eventually I'll watch the movie.
It's all right. It was a little bit overrated, but I thought it was okay.
Right.
Well,
kind of like a Stan Lynch movie.
White Hunter Blackheart's not out, so that's a crime. That should be on Blu-ray by now.
Yeah, I like that movie, but Clint's John Huston impression kind of wears on me a little bit when I watch it.
Well, is he meant to be John Huston or based on him?
It's based on him, but he's still doing—he's doing the John Huston way of talking. You know, they suppress "Let There Be Light" because it's no great advertisement for war. You know, he's doing that way of talking.
The problem is when Eastwood does that way of talking, he sounds like he's doing George C. Scott.
All right. All right. On that note, I think we'll call it a day.
All right. These lol cows are going back to the lol barn. So, anyway. With that, I'm going to go ahead and say adios.
And I'll say, hey, peace, dog.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.